Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the past 30 years, Care Heating and Cooling put you first. You are the reason they are open 7 days a week. You are why they make it easy to schedule service at careheatingandcooling.com. Concern for your safety is why they check every gas furnace for carbon monoxide. It's because of you that their technicians are paid to fix your furnace and air conditioner, not sell you a new one. And if you do need a new furnace, their team will make sure you get exactly what you need at a cost that fits your budget. Care Heating and Cooling is committed to doing business right. Call them at 1-800-COOLING when you need a company you can trust.
You all right?
What's going on?
Jay just sniggered, making me laugh.
I didn't do anything.
Hi, everybody. My name's Stephen Howson. This is Howson's Brew, joined by Jay Motti from Scotty and Motti.
Thank you, mate. Nice plug.
I'm joined by Ronaldo Brown from Stretford Paddock FC.
I'm the tier one podcast.
And a tier one podcast, which we've not done in 2 years now.
No.
But anyway.
It's a tier one podcast for a reason.
Because I was there, tier one. Don't accept nothing less.
No.
Yeah, this is the brew, but where are they?
Well, that's an excellent point, Ronaldo. Well made. As always, waiting on a brew. nice milky tea with two sugars.
And you do like it milky, you don't
know. I do like it milky. Bit of a serious one today. Unfortunately, we saw over the weekend Mason Greenwood get hammered by the press.
Yeah.
Starting comparing him to Ravel Morrison, which I think is just irresponsible for one, wrong for another, and so far wide of the mark that I almost can't believe it for a third. So the Daily Mail decide to initiate what I anticipated about 3 weeks ago, that Marcus Rashford's embarrassed this government. Tory little posh rich boys. I went to private school, probably don't know any black people, let alone like any black people. So at some point they're going to embarrass him. And a complete non-story about what Marcus invests his money into yesterday in the Mail.
Yeah.
So fuck you for starters, if you wrote that. Or if you work for him, fuck you. And we'll get into that. But I want to start on the Mason Greenwood stuff because obviously last week there was some brutal rumours about a rape allegation of a young Premier League star. Now, which newspaper was that in? Was that the Mail as well?
Yes, I believe it was.
We're all under the same kind of branch.
I think it was the Mail.
They edited that. Don't know on the back of whose say-so, but they edited that to suggest that it was someone in their 20s because the rumours immediately caught fire and I was getting texts off people I don't even speak to on a regular basis saying, I've had it on a good source from a copper that was in the interview room. That's Mason. Well, it's not Mason. Because it wasn't Mason. People jumped on the back of this. Mason's probably going through some shit at the moment as one of his friends recently committed suicide. I think the funeral for that was in the last few days.
Jeremy Whiston, the ex-City lad.
Which I'm sure you've got a circle of friends who must know that guy.
Yeah, a little bit of the younger kind of people that I know.
What is he,
obviously.
About 2 years younger than you?
He's a bit, I think, more than that.
17, once.
So. He was 17, 18. Line, yeah. But I do know players generally around that kind of age group. I know, obviously, Akira Simmons, who's played for us in Stretford Paddock FC. He's got a little brother that's at City, who's near enough the same age, a couple of years older, but did know of him. I know a little youngster for Blackburn, who was at City around the same age group as him as well. Because it was a girl, and I'm not going to go into that, but their little brother that was very, very, very close friends with him. So it was very close to home, closer to home than I would have liked it to have been. Obviously, it's been a quite deep time, but it's been coming in a kind of period where people have been trying to kind of look towards the mental health side when it comes to young people in general, not even just young people in sport.
Well, they've been saying they are.
That's what I kind of did mention when I did write, whatever I did write.
So yeah, you did an article last week, in almost in defence of Mason Greenwood. Do you want to give us the bullet points of that?
It was a defense of him, but I was using him kind of an example of defending just young athletes in general that are in limelight or spotlight in general. Because what I don't want it to look like is if I'm just kind of just completely defending him wholeheartedly about any kind of wrongdoing that he might possibly have done. Because I did say I do agree with accountability when it comes to being a professional and how you kind of have to conduct yourself. But it doesn't allow you to kind of push forward that kind of defamation of character and just the kind of the targeting that some of them get. And obviously, they're athletes and professionals, but they're humans first and they're people as well.
And he's a teenager.
And he's a teenager, and not everyone kind of reacts to the same. Someone might be able to deal with it accordingly, someone to block it out, but he could be a player that he could let it get to him, and that could be a possibility. You obviously seeing how the kind of death of Jeremy might have obviously affected him as he's openly stated. But I think people need to be careful, and I just don't like the way that your profession, when it comes to being a professional athlete in sport, kind of allows the kind of media attack or normalizes the media attack from journalists and people out there. I don't think it's right at all. I just think whether you like it or not, or whoever agrees with me or not, whatever you do, whatever your profession is, whatever kind of fame or spotlight you've got, just basic kind of like morality and just human rights, you just... Well, has to go about
being number 11 for Manchester United doesn't mean that your friend passing away doesn't hurt. You know, and for a young person who's... we'll throw a link to Ronaldo's article in the comments as well if you want to go read that. I lost, obviously, with the profession that I had as a young man, I lost a lot of friends. But I also lost civilian friends as well. And the civilian friends hurt more because I didn't expect it. And some of those took me a long time. I had a friend kill himself on New Year's Eve in 2004. He was 19. And honestly, I don't even know if I'm still over that, to be honest with you. It absolutely decimated us as like a friendship group, big friendship group. And I think if I'd have been under the spotlight, I mean, I was a soldier going through basic training.
Thank you, mate.
If I'd have been a professional athlete trying to deal with that, I don't know if any of us, Chisel, I don't know if any of us even can put into words what the pressure of playing for Manchester United in England in 2020 must be like. I don't think any of us could even fathom. I think it's a whole different existence. I think there's no words to describe just how nutty of an existence that is and what the adaptation of that must be. You know, Mason Greenwood's gone from being a guy that used to message our account saying, can I have a shout out, to being a guy that can't walk down a street without getting mithered, I'm sure. You know, I get texts off people saying, I've just seen Mason in Sale on a scooter. Like, so you can imagine what his parents are getting, you know, some of the stuff that he gets. You know, we know a guy that was like, oh, look at him cracking onto this bird here.
Yeah, yeah. I got that message. I was like, and?
Yeah, so what?
What are you filming that for and sending it to people?
Exactly. So I can't think any of us can fathom
what's all that about,
what that existence is like. So I'm not, please don't take this out of context because I know everyone's going to, but if he has gone off the rails, is he not allowed to go off the rails a little bit depending on the circumstances of what's just happened? Yes, he's a professional, but as Ronnie's saying, guys are human. And we don't know what the mental toll on that is. And we saw he's out here liking different posts.
He's liking posts about the fact that he might be struggling in the wake of his friend's death. And if that's he's not liking that,
saying,
there's a message liking that post saying, back off him, he's just lost a friend. He liked that. That's him sending a message to everyone.
Saying,
maybe, you know, there's truth to this.
Read this.
Yeah. He liked your article, didn't he? He liked it on Twitter. So that's a message from him. And then he's still... journalists, and I use the term loosely, still carry it on, still run an article. I think Steve Bates, I think, in the
mirror. You see Rio Ferdinand quote tweeted the article that was in the Mirror, which has said, Manchester United officials are worried Mason Green was going to turn into the new Ravel Morrison. For starters, he's actually achieved more in men's football than Ravel Morrison has already.
Yeah,
let's just put that out.
Yeah.
I also don't think that anyone has anywhere near the level of concerns, and the concerns with Ravel was, one, valid, and two, there was multi-layered and reasons for some of the concerns with Ravel. There's never been that sort of thing with Mason in the slightest.
Not remotely.
Rio Ferdinand quote tweeted and said, I want the name of the official that you spoke to.
Yeah, Eddie Spaceson. He's, yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get that anyway. People don't usually give their sources up, but I'm not hearing.
So you basically think they kind of use the United officials as like kind of a blanket statement of the fact that
is an idea pulled out of my ass.
Yes, and it, but then you can't fully say. It gives them kind of room to say, oh, I can't exactly tell you that, which means they've not spoke to anyone at all. But yeah. I don't know. It's just it's rumored
that he had a bad training session.
Yeah.
It's bad journalism. Fucking hell.
Yeah, that's you know, oh, Bruno got annoyed at a misplaced pass. Oh, then that case, he's like Vel Morrison. It's just like, that's quite a leap, to be frank. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, Gary Neville quote tweeted it and said he's unfollowing the account. You spoke about Rio. I think Jamie Carragher made a joke about it and Gary Neville told him it's not the time for joking. It isn't funny, which, you know, I wish he'd have said that a few years ago, to be honest with him, but he's right. Yeah. You know, he's liking the post you talk about. We had the rumours that we're doing the rounds and I was like yourself, getting a lot of messages and all this. And I was a little bit...
People like, I know. Yeah. I spoke to a copper. Fucking did you?
And it was... Maybe I'm being overly cynical and I might be wrong here, but, you know, that story went out on Friday without an age to it. So it allowed people to think it was... And then a few hours later, he's in his 20s.
A player in his 20s.
And I was... Maybe the cynic in me thinking, did they not know that when they published that story, that he was in his 20s? Could that not have been stood up?
I think they put this out as if to be like, ha, we've got an exclusive. And then everyone jumps to this wrong assumption and they're like, fuck's sake. I actually do think they had a bit of integrity about them there.
Really?
Yeah, I do. And I think they changed it by going, look, let's actually...
Are you sure it's integrity? Are you sure it's integrity or is it just... A response to backlash.
Yeah, could they not have done that? The thing is, right. I mean, I can only go off when I was a journalist. But you know, when the GMP, the press office, used to release a statement saying, you know, a man's been arrested, usually would put in his 20s, in his 30s, whatever. If they didn't, you could go back to them and say, listen, can you give us a little bit more on this because there's rumours doing the rounds or whatever. The only reason that they would withhold that is the reporting restrictions usually, and I can look at, again, I'm only going off what I remember from my reporting days, was if it identifies the victim.
Yeah. So if you said a 47-year-old Premier League star and there was one player of 47, they'd be like,
well, that's up, you know what I mean? So that's usually why. So I don't think that was the case in it. And I'm just, my cynicism came in was, did they know that? Did they think by being a bit more ambiguous?
I'm in agreement with you, though.
Yeah, like we can get this hype going and then we come in and go, oh, by the way, he's in his 20s.
That's what I'm saying, Neff. It's just the timing of releasing the article with all that was going on with Mason Greenwood. It's hard not to be cynical because then you think, are they just, they were purposely ambiguous and they published the story at around the same time, knowing that people would try and relate it to Mason Greenwood just to maximise engagement.
People just lie.
Yeah.
Nah, it's just...
Because I think we all got the same thing, didn't we? Like, my mates are... literally three different people told me, my mate's a copper and he was in the interview room and like he was... I saw different times that the guy got released from... And you're like...
Yeah. Screenshots. I mean, there was a screen... I'm not going into it, but there's certain screenshots going around which just drivel that everyone seems to be getting. Oh, this there is was the...
One, here's the girl. You mean that famous Instagram model that everyone knows?
I mean, have a bit of
it a better life.
Decency as well. Like, why are you posting that as supposedly the victim of a sexual assault anyway? Why are you doing that?
Yeah.
That's not even okay. Do you know what I mean?
Completely.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
this is what I'm saying.
There's a line that you just cross in here. Just pack it in, basically. And then in the middle of all this, you've got a young kid who's going through the mill, just lost his mate, and he's now getting accused of one of the worst crimes you can get accused of when it's got nothing to do with him whatsoever. And then, oh, like, 7 hours later, whatever it is, I even had people, this is how bad it is, that were going, I posted something about Mason, get off his back sort of thing, think I might have reposted your article. And then someone saying, oh, he's just been nits. I was like, well, he hasn't, though. After the thing came out about him in his sweater, saying, still could be true.
This is what I mean.
Like, honestly, mate.
I don't know.
Like, no, right. He's one of the, if not the most famous teenager in the country. He's not in his 20s. They would know he's not in his 20s, so it isn't him.
They literally changed it to throw everyone off the scent after the rumour. Whether that was deliberate, whether that was by accident, honestly, whether that was an integrity.
I don't know.
The reasons was, they put it out that he was in his 20s to basically tell everyone it wasn't Mason.
They did that after already maximising their engagement.
That's why I'm a little bit cynical. I don't know that, but I'm a little bit cynical, mate. I think they could have got that stood up a lot quicker that it was in his 20s. I think they may have even known that when they published the story and I made it. Again, though, we don't know. It's just... It jades you, and I am a journalist, you know, I've been a journalist for years, but when you see things like that, it just, it does deflate and you think, the stuff with the Mirror article, the stuff with the two male articles, the one about Marcus, which you're going to get onto, and the Mason stuff, or not Mason stuff, I should say, just, you know, articles doing around, you're like, got to be better than that, man.
Yeah.
You have?
Was the basis? I mean, like, Rio Ferdinand, I want to know who the official was. That supposedly spoke to him and said that they're worried for him. And especially, like, Ravel Morrison went royally off the rails. This isn't like someone not reaching his potential like Makeda. Like, would that not have been maybe a better one? Like, when you say the Ravel Morrison thing, that throws up all sorts of connotations. Yeah, why not just someone not to reach
the potential? But the thing is with Ravel Morrison's kind of problems were literally ongoing from a child.
Yeah, I think he had 10 years old. I think in his defence, like, if we can as well, I think Ravel Morrison, I mean, I don't know him personally. I've met him a couple of times, I don't know him. I think he had maybe issues that weren't addressed.
Maybe they haven't been addressed
because it was beyond being a bit, you know, bit of a jack the lad or whatever. I think he had issues.
If he ever does an autobiography, a crowd around him. It's going
to
be unreal.
Yeah. That he didn't need to be around as well. And I think that wasn't dealt with. And I think, you know, as you've just pointed out, Mason's already achieved more. Ravel never really got there. I know he played for West Ham, he played for QPR.
He never had consecutive starts in the Premier League.
You know what I mean? You used to watch that 2011 team. Quality. You know, Pogba was in it, Lingard was in it, the Keane brothers, Tony Cliff, decent players, top level players. He stood out, even more than Pogba. I went to watch that team.
But Pogba and Morrison would be scoring week in, week out, and you'd think there was a strike partnership, not a central midfield.
For me, Ravel Morrison, every time he got the ball, you're excited. This kid's going to do, and he'd run past players. He was having a laugh. He was just enjoying his football. He was amazing. And you thought, he's someone to watch. And yet, you know, did he even make a debut for United? I can't remember.
Yeah, his first touch was a back heel. I sort of
forgotten that, but I know you're right. I expected him to do great things. And I know he's still going. Now he's only 27. It's not like his career's over, but let's face facts, he's nowhere near that.
And what?
Do you know what's odd about that? The fact is, the Ravel Morrison comparison is obviously harmful to Greenwood, but it's almost like an unnecessary shot at Ravel.
Yeah.
As well.
Congrats to Ravel this weekend as well, actually. He made his debut for Jamaica. No, he's still trying. He's still working away, and whether or not he reached the potential that he had as a boy, probably not. But at the end of the day, he's still a professional footballer. He's out here, like I said, I think he was Saudi Arabia, I think they played this weekend, and he came on making his debut for Saudi Arabia. So
it's a shame as well, isn't it? You know, because that's a good news story for him, making his international debut.
Another international academy graduate.
And you Google his name, you're going to get, Mason Greenwood's turning into Ravel Morrison.
Yeah, it's just...
Really?
It seemed like an opportunity for him to take shots at both. It's just very strange. I don't know. It depends on what you want to see their kind of agenda is, which I think is quite obvious.
I always pine for him anyway, but days like this, you just pine for the Fergie, don't you?
Yeah.
You're all banned.
Like,
everyone who's wrote that article, you're banned for life from the.
Who'd you work for?
Yeah, you can
bye.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, bye.
No. Yeah.
I actually wish United would get a set of bollocks about themselves now, because it seems like there was a journalist, let's say, and an actual journalist from a reputable source, so obviously not the MEN. a reputable journalist once told me that if you write something about Manchester City in a negative light, they phone you up and ask you to explain it.
I was at a press conference once where Pep had a go at City press conference. Pep had a go at referees. It was in his first season when he wasn't the god that everyone thinks he is now at City or, you know, in the Premier League. And he'd had a go about the refs not protecting players or whatever. And we were at the press conference and there was question after question about referees. No more questions about referees. All right, then, I've got a question for you. Officials, what do you think of them? No more questions about officials. Okay, then, the authorities. It was just like roundabout way. And I think, I forget her name, is it Vicky Floss, whatever her name is, who was like the head of media at City, came down and she was watching this. And afterwards, and you know, I can say this, I don't really care anymore. She took us all to, banned me from the Etihad. What did he do? She took us all to one side and she said, I won't have this. Question after question about referees. She said, it's not on. He answered one and you're asking it again and again. There's an agenda going on. She said, if you were that locked down the road, you'd have been barred, meaning United, like you'd have barred you. I was going to arrange a dinner with him and I'll cancel it if this carries on. Fuck about dinner with Pep Guardiola. You cancel what you want. Don't even turn up. So I was like, right, okay, you can't tell us what to do. But the point of making is that they were on it and it was like, we're not having it. Yep. And then a week later, you know what? it did the trick, because a lot of them journalists were asking, like, even though the story was ongoing, so he was having this feud with referees, it kept on for a few weeks, the questions sort of died down because people were like, you know what, don't want to bite the hand that feeds you.
This journalist was telling me, like, you write a negative article about them and they phone you up and ask you to explain it, and he goes, they don't tell you to stop. He goes, you just can't be asked. Like, I write an article, I'm researching my next one, I can't be asked having my ear chewed off about they go through every single line. Why did you say that? Why did you say this? Why did you say that? He goes, and nothing I've said's wrong. Nothing I've said's blah, blah, blah. He goes, no, they're not taking me to court. He goes, they just ask you to justify every pissing sentence. And he goes, you can't be asked. He goes, and it's effective because you go, I'm not going to write that. I can't be bothered with the earache afterwards. And it's effective. And since Fergie left, there was a bit of an open season on criticise United, especially under Moyes, and as Louis became a bit of a clown for the press, and Jose's Jose, and Solskjaer, you know, is himself on there. But there's no fear factor at United. There's no respect. There's no authority. And there's no one to be like, who the fuck do you think you are? And this is a genuine thing. I literally said to someone at United, just let me come into the press conferences and I'll heckle shit questions. I asked. They said no.
You'd have a sore throat by the end of it, mate.
Not run to that, dick.
Now you are right, because I'm thinking, are United looking at the Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford kind of drama and articles?
United need to start shooting back, man.
I want to know, because I'm thinking, surely they must know that's going to affect the team. That's going to affect the squad. It's just, it's negative energy, it's negative vibes, it's just negative, just pure negativity surrounding
it.
And obviously, if Mason Greenwood is going in with the obviously problems that he's got, and Marcus is having to deal with all this shit, and this is all that they're hearing within the club around United, it's an energy sapper. I mean, that's what it is, because we used to call stuff that when you used to play in teams, energy sappers. It could only takes one person.
We used to play for him.
Oldham. One person.
That's quality.
Speaking of which, it's your old gaffer's birthday today, isn't it?
Who's? Tony.
Scholes's.
Wow. So I've gone quiet over there.
He was his gaffer for how long? He must have came in.
Fucking hell! Sorry, if you don't know, Ronaldo played for Liverpool. I'm not going to put the thing on because he cries, but he did.
Nah, he came in and obviously Scholes's tenure was short-lived, but that's what I'm saying. Back to the point I was originally making.
Sorry, son. Yeah. Go on.
It can have an effect, and probably it's a good thing it's come when it's been International Week and it's not been around games. So obviously the stories might eventually die out. But as you're saying, I would have liked United to come out in some way, shape or form and been like, yeah, this is not on. Because obviously it's not it's harmful to Greenwood and it's harmful to Rashford.
We've got a press conference Friday. That's your perfect opportune moment.
Do it. Yeah? It's harmful to the club. Because obviously I've talked about duty of care, and duty of care is important, and it doesn't lessen just because you're a professional athlete. Simple as.
Walk into that press conference with a bat, put it on the table, and be like, right, what are we talking about then today?
Right. I mean, just, you're right.
What?
They've got a pushback. I mean, I'm not into...
Not threatened anyone.
Sometimes, even Fergie could just ban people for nothing. Like, it got a bit silly at times. I think he banned Daniel Taylor for telling the truth about a real Fernand injury once. And it was just like, got a 2-year ban or something.
And that's why he wrote the book, wasn't it?
It did get a bit giddy at times, but it was Fergie, so what are you going to do? So like, I'm not into just banning journalists constantly, but there has to be some sort of accountability, like you're saying. And when it's harmful, this isn't, you know, Wayne Rooney's been out levered out of his head the night before or whatever. It's just nonsense. This is like a lad who's really struggling, getting thrown under the bus.
Right.
And you've got to have
these
a bit of a line
here. These
folks
are in a privileged position. Let's get it right. I've not been to a game since March. He's not been to a game since March. You've not been to a game since March. These fucking knobs that get to go to matches behind closed doors don't realise the privileged fucking position that they're in, that they're getting to go and actually watch football. They're not paying for their fucking tickets. They're paid to be there. And these dicks get to ask stupid bone questions like that, create narratives and agendas on the back of absolute nonsense. Someone from either the Premier League or the club, and I'd prefer it to be the fucking club, needs to take a stand. And they need to say, do you know what? You've took the piss. Get out there. What, us as a fan channel aren't allowed in press conferences, right? But all of these people that create absolute shitstorms for the club on the basis of nothing, they're allowed in there on the back of what? The circulation of some of them newspapers is fucking less than this very TV show that we're doing right now.
I know, I agree with you. And I was surprised, I think, you know, with the Greenwood one, was it, I think it's Steve Bates, I'm pretty sure it was, who, I'm not having any dealings with, I know who he is, but it surprised me it was him. He wasn't someone I'd associate with that sort of nonsense. I may be wrong, but I just, it wouldn't have been a name that sprung to mind, and yet he's written something that, you know, it seems to have very little basis on anything. In terms of reality, it just seems to be almost created.
Do you think the kind of backlash and the stir that they kind of create is what they are half looking for, though? Because that's part of it. You're looking at them thinking, that's wrong, that's obviously bullshit, it's just not right. They have got to know that, though. They've got to know it's not right. And it kind of makes you look at it as if...
But they've got an editor, like, they're going, I need 3 United stories a week, lad.
Yeah, you know, you're right. And it's the clickbait thing, isn't it? Like,
just clickbait.
I've got to hit these targets and I've got... And I've had conversations, I'm not going to name them, with journalists who I've called out, who've privately messaged me saying, listen, you're right, basically. You know, that article was... But I'm under a lot of pressure and I've got to hit the targets. And, you know, I've got editors who want this. Like you say, they want so many words on this and they want so many hits. And it is a clickbait thing. And, you know, we're pushing against it.
So apparently that justifies them. No, not at all. That's what I don't get.
Yeah.
But do you know what? One thing that's, and obviously they don't sponsor us anymore. They did sponsor us at one time. But one thing that The Athletic actually brought to journalism was fucking journalism again.
Yeah.
Because obviously we know several Athletic journalists. They don't have click targets. They don't have, I need 55 articles a day off you for your stupid fucking blog on your formerly great website. We need, I want interesting stories. We know Mitten's flying off to, well, used to pre-lockdown, flying off to fucking Brazil for one interview. Amazing. No, that's journalism. The fact that they're willing to invest the time, excuse me, and the considerable expense of airfare to fucking Brazil tells me that they're interested in proper journalism. And I think that's sorely lacking across the entire journalism sphere. And I almost want to come up with a new fucking name for these clickbait merchants that are just... Like, where's the journalistic skill in Bruno Fernandes made a tweet? I'm sorry. Like, we wouldn't fucking create reports on the back of tweets. How are supposed journalists for national fucking entities getting away with this sort of stuff that... I mean, literally, there's fan channels out there, and I include us in this, that are... I've got a higher journalistic integrity and a higher journalistic ceiling than journalists.
I know what you mean. He's called it journalism, just churning out
journalist like
rubbish.
It.
Do you know what I mean? It's not even, you know, you've not done any research, you've not got it stood up, you've not got any sources, you've just, well, that could be true. So let's
let me just say it.
Or here's an article, and let's get on to the Marcus Rashford one, right? So, like I said, 3 weeks ago, Marcus made the government do a U-turn for the second time. Which honestly, I mean, we've said everything we need to say about Marcus Rashford. Smash Eto'd it. Fucking unbelievable. Like,
Smash Eto'd.
Love that.
Just destroyed everything he's tried to do. Fantastic. Well played. I honestly didn't. After they knocked him back the first time, I was shocked when he got a U-turn. I was way more shocked when they U-turned on the second one because it had kind of gone quiet. Except the fact that, I mean, gone quiet, at least in the government side of things, it had not gone quite on Marcus's timeline when he's like, anyway, he's like Wollstone.
He's like mobilised the country, hasn't he?
Yeah, it amazing. Was just like, wow. Literally amazing. But I still didn't think he would get them to do a U-turn. And all you snivelling little conservative MPs as well that voted no and are trying to get a bit of shine off saying, oh, congratulations, well done. I fucking take names, so fucking stand
by. I saw one of your tweets and I'm thinking... Have you been like kind of discouraging? Just
don't you worry, I'm having all of them, Ronnie. I'll go through every single fucking one of the dirty bastards. No stone unturned.
I remember seeing that tweet and thinking, fucking hell.
Like the Nazi hunters getting over to Argentina.
You've got the.
Excuse me?
You've got the bad girl of Brexit to cope with first.
If she's a real thing, I don't know if that's real.
I think it is.
But yeah, so with Marcus Rashford, this weekend, what we saw is the Daily Mail decided to delve into. Some of the finances of Marcus Rashford and see that he's bought, was it 5 houses for 2 million? I'm sorry, in certain parts of Cheshire, that's not even getting you an average house, let alone the average house.
It's getting you an apartment in London, basically.
Or not even sometimes. Not even. 400 grand, good luck getting an apartment in London, I would say. Five homes. So Marcus has done this. You know, guess what? If he wants to invest in property, sound. Marcus, let's say he earns 10 million a year. I don't know what he earns.
Yeah.
He's probably paying 4.5 in tax. So for all of those, why doesn't he put his own money into the school meals things? He is, and actually, can I address this while we're on as well? Because that dick last night, that John, whatever she's called, was like, why doesn't he put his own money into it? He does. You'll never hear Marcus say it, but I'll fucking say it for him. He does. And it's an eye-watering figure that he put in. He kick-started it, basically. So don't you fucking worry about what he's putting in. He's putting in.
Exactly. I remember I saw a tweet. You know, have you heard of a Carla?
Yeah, of course.
Carla, Carla, quite a well-known musician, but he's obviously very, very...
Akela.
No, it's a Carla. It's not Akela.
It's Akela.
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 It's a Carla. No way.
Right. Regardless,
one of the most well-spoken fucking dudes.
Yeah, very well-spoken.
Mate, I could listen to him all day long.
I love listening to him. He did kind of, he touched
he
on...
He might be the smartest guy out there.
Yeah, he's a fucking brain.
Certainly one of the most articulate.
Absolute brain
body. Yeah, explaining his point.
And articulate as fuck. Yeah, like, that's what I mean. He's intimidatingly articulate.
He's famous for his anti... What's his name?
Tommy Robinson.
Tommy Robinson.
When Tommy Robinson was on that chat show and he just destroyed
him. Ruined him.
Didn't just destroy him, he destroyed every point he was trying to make about racism and all that, how it comes from the top down, not the bottom up. It was fantastic. If you can't, just Google Carla or Kayla, whatever you want to say. It's A-K-A-L-A. Tommy Robinson, and just watch someone, you know, and then ring the police and report a murder.
I can't remember some of the... He did tweet about the tax, like how much that Marcus Rashford would actually pay towards tax because he's extortionate wages. But wait, what's this? Carp dig.
Don't you worry about that. I'm
no. I was like, what's going on there?
He's supposed to read it now. He's
right,
here.
All right, I'll read it, Joe. Right, yeah. So we've had a super chat from Carp Dig. Thank you very much. We've got a super chat. Throw it in the mixer in below. And he's saying, some of these editors live in mansions. Actually, a lot of the people who run most of the UK press, one, don't pay any tax in the UK, for starters, and some of them are literal billionaires. So that's a whole other topic that I'm sure me and Ronaldo can get into on a late night show.
Yeah, what late night show is that?
We'll figure out. We'll make one.
Is it before my bed? Anyway. No.
Well, it's not after your bedtime, is it?
That's a different show that's not on this channel.
Yeah. Moving on.
Betty, go on.
So what was that Kayla saying?
I can't remember word for word what he said, but he mentioned how the likes of Marcus Rashford and the people that play football, in terms of how much that they're actually taxed, that it's almost disproportionate into the amount that they get taxed in terms of, obviously, the general public, obviously, the fact that they earn more. I'm not going to actually state or quote anything he said because I can't remember perfectly, so I don't want to misquote him.
But paraphrasing him is what you're doing.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to paraphrase, but he did touch on that, saying you can talk about the amount that footballers earn and whatever they want to spend it on and have an opinion, but which I think generally is just usually born out of envy. I think that's what half of the lack of duty of care towards footballers anyway, in terms of what they've got to go through. You might earn a lot, but it doesn't mean that they're devoid of human problems.
I saw a tweet from him earlier, which was like, you always see this brought up about footballers. And hilariously, the government was like, I think the Premier League footballers need to do more. And Marcus went, what was that? Okay. And now they're like, do you mind not doing as much as you do? Not bad. But like, you don't ever see Formula One drivers called out. You don't ever see tennis players called out.
Hedge fund managers.
Yeah.
What about them?
Golfers.
You never mind sports people.
Yeah, or hedge fund man. But yeah, like, golfers, you could be the 200th best golfer in the world and you're earning...
And you're sat over there.
Yeah, you're earning like Premier League player... You're earning the sort of wages that you wouldn't get out of bed for a Premier League player wage. Like some of the money involved in some of the other sports that never get spoken about. But footballers does. And why does footballers do? Because it's a working class sport. Very often played by immigrants. That's...
Arcala.
See, I knew was Arcala, like I said. Thank you. Is it to say Steve's right? Arcala. Thank you.
Arcala. Perfect.
Shut up.
Perfectly said by me. But when you
if you're watching Arcala, apologies for this discussion.
When you were explaining that, I was kind of trying to think, why is it that footballers get that kind of view in comparison to other sports that earn relatively lucrative type of money?
Look at Lewis Hamilton. Formula One's had one black guy as far as I'm aware. Lewis Hamilton. That's it.
I'm not a Formula
One. Up until Tiger Woods, was there any other black golfers? Couldn't tell you.
Vijay Singh, was he not before Tiger Woods?
Yeah,
maybe
Vijay.
The point is,
I get your point, because even the likes of tennis. All right, so you got tennis, golf, Formula One.
You got the Williams sisters, but I don't know of any black dudes.
No, it's not about the colour. It's just the kind of...
I was going to say Arthur Ashe, yeah.
It's the...
I'm not very up on these sports.
No. It's the fact that tennis isn't obviously working class, is it?
No, is it fuck?
So
go and find out how much, because Janine for 5 minutes was interested in going to do tennis and she went and found out how much tennis lessons was, and then that dream was over. But do you know, like, there's when it's a fiver to go and play under sevens football at your local team, or it's 50 quid an hour to be taught tennis lessons. Working class parents aren't taking their little Timmy and Johnny down to go and play tennis as much as they maybe would like to, as much as they maybe like to go into a sport that's not as cutthroat. Yeah, think about if you had to start doing the numbers, and if you was one of those guys that was like, right, I've got an athlete as a kid, where's the best place for me to put him? You wouldn't put him in football. There's too many variables in football. Would you put him into athletics? Again, a lot of that's down to just pure genetics. Would you put him in?
You've got to be like a one of one to be in.
Yeah, yeah, maybe rugby, maybe rugby union, maybe like a weird one like archery. Like Billy Connolly had a joke. Where's them guys that do like the walking marathons? Where do they train? Because none of them from Manchester. I guarantee you that. That's a posh boy sport. Can you imagine? You come home and go, Dad.
You want to do a walking marathon?
Going to do a walking marathon, fucking walk like that. Fucking not in this house. Tell you that for free. Like, I did biathlon, shooting and skiing. I did it in the army. There's no way you're doing that if you're just in Manchester. Where would you even train in that? Well, maybe not. Shooting's not the best one, but do you know what I'm saying?
Because where do you do all these skiing's another one. Skiing's not working class. Skiing's another wealthy Tories ish.
Horse dancing, dressage thingy, right?
Horse dancing.
Horse dancing, that's what it is, isn't it? Make me horse dance.
Where you doing that? Very cultured on this show.
You're not doing that. There's not one. There's not a Colliers fucking dressage centre. I guarantee. Don't you dare Google this.
This. Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It's like the stable. Yeah.
Like even Formula One. Do you know how much fucking cash you need to be a go kart racer at six?
No, it's ridiculous. Oh, you know what I mean?
I got to buy you a car.
Horse racing. Is that even the terminology for it? I don't
horse
know.
Racing.
Horse riding. Horse racing.
Well, both.
You are racing with horses. It's the same difference.
Do you ever need any tips for the Grand National? Come and see Ronaldo. You can see he's got his finger on the pulse when it comes to horse racing.
Equestrian.
Or horse riding.
Equestrian.
Equestrianism.
Well, even horse racing, the barrier to entry to buy a racehorse,
you don't see
any, cheap, are they?
There's no working class people
no.
that ride horses, I'm pretty sure. Because for us, you've
got really,
to afford a horse.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's not cheap.
They're dearer than dogs, I reckon.
I reckon a little bit more dearer than dogs.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah.
Need a bit more walking than dogs as well.
And probably a little bit more food as well. Mm. Well, actually, no.
Unless you make it quick.
Oh, actually, and you need somewhere to have the horse, which is a lot of
which if you live in a fucking flat in Hume, you ain't fucking doing.
It depends if they can fit. No, actually, they won't. But you get my point anyway.
So when I was growing up, right, my mate had grew up in Drawsden. My mate and his mum lived on a house on Scott Road in Drawsden. So it's pure just... If you've seen Drawsden, it's just every house is a semi-detached. That's it. Like, they've got a tiny little driveway, which is a fucking lie if you call it a driveway. And then they've got average-sized gardens.
Every house is a semi?
No, but, like, there's a lot of semi-detached houses. It's a 1930s sort of government estate build that they did everywhere. They had a little bit of a garden. Now, behind his house, there was an electricity sort of...
Substation.
Substation sort of thing, yeah. So, and there was a little bit of grass, like, around it. Like a small field, not much. And we used to go in the back and play football sometimes. We've lifted his fence up, we've gone out, we've took a ball with us. There's a fucking horse in here. Some people had decided to buy a horse, just like a random house on the street, and was just letting it run fucking free in this field near the substation at the back. You ever been chased by a horse?
No.
They're fucking rapid, Jay.
No, okay.
They're fucking well fast.
I'm sure you're going to get chased by a horse. I'm not sure about that.
What the fuck? Little 13-year-old steal at
Superman outrunning a horse.
No way.
Trees though, isn't it? Got a jink. You got a jink and move, Jay. Horses are big.
We used some horses near us though. In the Ginnell, go through the Ginnell near my house. There was fields of horses in them.
What?
Posh. You mean the council estate? Yeah. Well, I think they must have had a sale on horses and Droyles
didn't
pine.
Got a super chat from a dick. Yeah, it says United should hire a sports psychologist to help all the players. I think they do have some.
Probably do have one. Yeah.
They used to work with, is it Brian Bezic?
When we spoke to Jesse Lingard when we were Devils, he said he I think he brought a psychologist in, or he asked to work with a psychologist. I don't know if it was a club, so he brought his own one in. But he spoke about that, about working with a psychologist. And that was a good example, because Jesse, remember when Jesse did all the interviews and he spoke about his mental health. He spoke about being struggling. He had some family things he was dealing with. And for about a week, maybe 4 or 5 days, people were relatively sympathetic to his next bad performance. And then people were like, don't care about your mental problems, mate. You've got to sort your head out and start playing football better. So, you know.
But it all leads into everything.
Maybe we can be a little bit
You
kinder.
Sleep better at night, your performance improves.
Of course it does.
But the issue is, you're talking about sports psychologists, whether they are in a club. Surely for a sports psychologist to be used, they've got to be seeked out by the actual player. And obviously in the kind of climate we live in where we're men in general, especially sportsmen, are not really going to go. They don't want to ask for help or assistance for the most part. It's still going to be down. That's kind of just where we are. So
do you think that's changing at all, Ronnie? You say like the environment you're out. Yeah. I know what you mean, you know, alpha male type thing. But do you think there is more of that conversation going on, or do you think we're still miles away from that?
I think it's gone on a little bit just because people have highlighted obviously the toxic masculinity kind of narrative. But would you have felt like
if you'd have been in the dressing room and you said, you know what, I'm really struggling, I'm going to see a psychologist, would you think your teammates would have been like, what's this guy on about?
Probably.
Yeah.
That's just a general, that's changing room culture, isn't it? It's kind of machismo. That's just the way it is. And
especially in an academy when you're trying, you haven't made it, you're trying to make it.
It's literally
any sort of weakness or perceived weakness is going to be. Like I spoke to a counsellor on the back end of Iraq because that mashed me up like an absolute kettle, big time. And I broke my ankle following going on there. Mm. We'd had a civilian doctor that had been in with us. And I don't know why. I don't know what made me do it. The guy was a bit all over the place and he couldn't find a notepad that he was looking for. So he was making small talk. So I'm just sitting there like this, and I wouldn't have said it to a military doctor, and I don't know why, and I don't know why I said it to him, but he was like, he was just saying stuff like, how are you? How was your sleep? This, that, and the other, and I was like, oh yeah, I ain't slept in about 3 months. And he went, what? Shit. And he was like, someone had obviously told him, or if any of the lads say this, you need to get a form out. And I ended up going and speaking to a counsellor for about 16 weeks or so. And they disguised it, because obviously they don't tell everybody else in your unit, you're going and speaking to a psychiatrist or anything like that. They said it was part of the rehab on my ankle. And I had to go up and I had these little conversations with someone. And I found it really helpful. Though I didn't have to go look at fucking splodges of ink or nothing like that. And I literally sat there with a bloke in his office and had a brew. Yeah. And that was the kind of how it was. And I know there's a few of my friends that have been chatting to counsellors and stuff like that recently. And I think people have found it quite beneficial. And I think the stigma of going to them is a little bit less than it used to be, because I really didn't want to go, mate. Like the same what Ronnie's saying with the dressing room culture, I don't want any of the lads to know that. Oh, fucking sent me head west when, you know, getting shelled and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, regardless whether you've been in the army or not, there shouldn't be a stigma about going to see a psychologist. I've seen a psychologist and I've never served in the army or been a footballer. Do you know what I mean? I don't think there should be, but especially when you have been through something like that, then it's completely understandable. And I think, you know, the more people, more we can have that conversation, the better, because asking for help isn't a bad thing or negative thing, or admitting you've got all the answers.
These footballers are under. They've got to be someone that they can try and bounce something off and go, am I losing my mind here? Or is like, I liked a tweet and someone made an article about it. Can you imagine that?
That's mad, that, innit?
I just think that's cracking. Being a footballer in that kind of limelight, or being an athlete in that kind of limelight, it just must be such an artificial way of living. You can't almost.
Go on, sorry.
Now, before we jump in, you can't. You can think you can almost imagine it, but it's almost unimaginable how you almost have to live like, because it's not normal, obviously. You can't do the little things in life that you kind of take for granted, almost.
And it sounds, these are young, wild men.
Yeah.
We've got to remember that. Yeah. These are young, wild men.
Making mistakes that probably, the mistakes or the kind of stuff that Mason Greenwood's been doing.
Oh, mate, if you've had a camera crew on Jay at 20. Anyone?
Exactly.
I'd have been jailed. For starters. There's my 20s gone.
Did you have hair?
Oh,
No,
I lost it at 18.
Did you actually?
Yeah, I did actually. Literally.
It was meant to be.
Genuinely.
We've had a new super chat. It's from Cap Digging Games,
mate. Yeah, cheers, Ronnie, my mate.
As an economics student, the most hilarious phrase is that footballers are overpaid, especially since this is never used with other sports. Again, yeah, we were talking about Formula One. Like, Formula One, if you look at the amount that them guys earn, Lewis Hamilton doesn't pay a single dime of tax either.
Don't get me started on. Don't. It's very unpopular opinion to criticise Sir Louis.
My criticism of him was letting a woman like Nicole Scherzinger go, but obviously that's a different story.
Nicole Scherzinger made me wait 3 hours for an interview.
She's a bellend, though. I guarantee she's a bellend.
That's what I'm saying. She made me wait for an interview and then didn't even do the interview, so you did the right thing.
She's a bellend. She's a bellend. Why was you?
I was waiting for the whole X Factor, right? I did Simon Cowell and Sharon Osbourne, and then the only one left was Nicole Scherzinger. Wait. This was at Old Trafford Cricket Club. And we kept waiting.
Just rewind that sentence. Right. He was interviewing
Simon Cowell, and then Sharon Osbourne was there, and I did them two and Louis Walsh, and then it was like waiting for Nicole, and they're like, Nicole's gonna be here soon. And we waited, and it wasn't just me, there was a few other journalists there.
What was your questions?
Oh, do you know what? It was the song for Grenfell had just come out, so it was like, oh, you know, the song for Grenfell that's doing really well. I think that Simon Cowell had been involved in that. But my editor laughed because she said, when I started asking him questions about the X Factor, she said, you couldn't have sounded more bored if you tried. Right, so, you know, X Factor's at
should have asked Simon Cowell, yeah. He looks permanently sweaty.
His hands were very soft, though. Softest hands I've ever
felt. Oh, from just the handshake?
I moisturised him as we spoke.
You sort of massaged his palm.
Yeah, I was thinking. So Simon.
Shut up, you
tell me. Yeah, she made me wait anyway. And then she got there and they went, oh, she's not going to be able to do any interviews because she's running late.
What's she late for? Interviews?
Yeah, I don't know, Joe's whatever.
One of the softest hands I've ever shook.
Go on.
Fergie.
Really?
100 mile an hour. Shocked I was. Nearly fell over.
I've never shook.
Thought I'd shook hands with a loaf of butter.
That might have been your... hand sweat from nervousness.
Yeah, well, you
used to...
Who's his hand? Was your hand
like shaking a cloud.
Where did you meet him to shake his hand?
Cliff.
Really?
Old school.
I went to the Cliff, but I didn't see him. I went twice.
The Cliff takes me.
Cliff. Yeah, I didn't shake...
A little bit of blue tow rope around the edge. Literally about 6 foot of tow rope and then like 40 foot of people.
Yeah. When did you go? How long ago?
98. Right. So it'd be the summer before we won everything.
98.
Remember that?
Yeah, 93, aren't
we? Not a bad summer, that.
You were born. So you feel old now.
So I fought with David Beckham. Yeah. And I got run over by Roy Keane.
Good old Keane, oh. Hey. And he asked, was that deliberate? Did he just drive into the crowd?
Did he ask you to apologise?
You could watch training from like a bit of side on the grass and they'd literally just roped off a tiny little bit of it. But then after training, you sort of waited in the car park and they put these crash barriers out. And like, I remember Blomqvist come out wearing high heels. It's allowed, but he did. Beckham came out, made sure every single
stop you there. Yeah. High heels were initially made for men.
Cool story. So David Beckham came out, made sure every single person got a photograph or an autograph or whatever they wanted. And then there was a crash barrier here, like an L, and then a straight crash barrier here. And Beckham came out, did all this, and then all along there. But everyone kept kind of filling in the middle because you could kind of like nudge a little bit forward. Keane got in his car, silver Range Rover, just drove at the people.
Yeah. I love them. That's like my experience with me and Keane as well. I love all that. But yeah, I remember when you used to be able to go with Cliff and just, you could sneak onto the pitch. Like my mate nicked Mark Hughes' training, tracky bottoms. Chavs, I'm sorry, I was only 13. But you could literally just sit on the side of the pitch watching them train. Now, you're not even allowed to go to where they stop the cars outside Carrington, are you? Stop people doing that.
What a treat. And like, you speak to some old timers and they'd be like, yeah, you used to just go and watch George Best play. And you're like, fucking hell, what a treat.
Joe's put something down the screen now. What's that about high heels?
He's just taking us off topic with high heels.
He's just proving the fact that I said.
Yeah, Ronaldo was right.
Ronaldo was right.
Obviously, you said it like as if it was very, very strange for a man to walk out in high heels.
But it is.
Yeah, it is.
Or it was.
It is, actually.
It is for a change. It is, considering that he probably got changed within eye shot of Roy Keane.
Well, yeah, that's very, very risky.
And nothing was said, anyway.
Good knowledge, that, Ronnie. Well done, lad.
Thank you.
But yeah, like, I think, oh, man, I should have never just gone to school and I should have just gone and watched them train at the Cliff every day. Like, my auntie's got a good one about being in front of Cantona's car. She was waiting for Cantona and he walked up to her and he was thinking, oh, he's going to say something to me. And he was like, can I get my car? She was like, if you've not seen the Cliff, like, there's the pig pitch and then there's the slopes, isn't there? And there's literally everyone's car parking spaces there. She was standing there watching training, didn't move as she froze as he came towards her. It's like, can I get a car? Oh, she goes, she shit it that bad. She just moved out of the way, never got a picture or an autograph.
I wouldn't blame her. You would be like, it's Eric, you know.
So basically, it never happened. Anyway.
But the selfies replace the autograph.
Yes.
And it's better than the autograph.
It is better.
I took a, you know, one of the disposable cameras when I went there. I posted some pictures on Twitter the other day because I dug some
thumbs
out.
Thumbs over the front of
it. Yeah, and, you know, when we went there, it was like I said, we was only 13, 14, whatever. But yeah, you used to always get things signed and took some pictures and stuff. But my, it's funny now because everyone hates him, but my thing then was my big hero was Paul Ince. And I remember when I met Paul Ince, I was starstruck. I was like,
Early 90s Ince was mint.
I know.
Like, it was, what everyone loves about Kante, think of that, but way more aggressive.
He was mint. People have revisionism because he ended up at the Scousers and everyone hates him. And also he comes out with idiotic comments on when
he was a
pundit.
Hell of a footballer.
He was, mate. Inter Milan didn't want him for nothing.
No.
And this is when Inter Milan were like one of the top
seasons. The stones on the guy as well, yeah, to tell Keno and Robbo, you call me the governor with a straight face.
That's just ridiculous. Shockey always tells me that he never went in for that.
What, calling him the governor? Yeah. Oh, he never said it.
He just didn't call him.
We'll ask Chucky this.
Yeah.
Did he walk around going, did someone like Paul, he'd be like, my name's the governor? Fucking is it? Yeah, Paul. So we got a super chat from Max Kettley. He says, shout out to Vicky Ford, Chelmsford MP for Children, who voted against Marcus's bill. Never been more embarrassed to live somewhere in my life. It wasn't the only one, mate. There was it 303 of them?
Something like that, yeah, the majority.
I'll get through all of you, don't worry. And Ross Murphy with a super chat says you would run away from the live CSB horse. It was it was a grey one, wasn't a black one.
A grey horse?
A grey horse.
I don't think I've ever seen one of them. But to be fair, I've not seen
it's
many
It's not
horses.
Fucking pink, is it? It's grey. It's a pretty natural colour, isn't it?
For a horse?
Yeah.
Never seen a grey horse.
You seen a green one?
A green one? No.
Did you have to think about that? Ignore him.
No, wait.
Mocking the unwell here. It's like taking a mick out of children. He's actually sat there going, for green horse, just take a notice of him, son. Leave him alone. Pack it in.
What about blue ones?
Don't stop it.
No, to be fair, I've not seen that many horses. So
really? Nah. That is me thinking you're an expert on equestrians.
Nah. Right. I'm going to call it a day there. But if we didn't make our point clear at the start, we will fucking come for you if you keep writing articles like this. Your names are public. Your faces are public. And I'll fucking find you. So, if you want...
Is that a threat?
No.
Stephen will send you a strongly worded tweet.
And I'll ask you to justify it in person. There we go. That was not a threat. Stop writing bullshit, because we'll find you, right? And there's no need for it, for starters.
Ronnie will get on his green arse.
And United, get a set of bollocks.
In his stilettos.
The day I do that.
Hey, Ronnie in his stilettos on a green horse.
Come on, man. How many people like me? Anyway.
Right, yeah, let's not go down whatever route you're going to take there. I don't want to know.
Manchester United, grow a pair of bollocks. And on Friday, when they all try and walk through, start putting your hand on someone's chest. Not you. But you go.
Do what Fergie used to do when he was annoyed. Change the press conference to 8 o'clock in the morning. An hour before. or at 1 o'clock on a... midnight on a Thursday. Send out an email. By the way, the press conference changed now. It's now 3 hours early.
And you just see Ian Irvine and Mandy there like that.
Oh, no. Oh, fuck. All the journalists from London like having to get in the car and drive through the night.
Yeah, fuck them. Honestly, fuck them. They've got no respect for the football club. They've got no respect for the players. So why treat them with respect?
To be fair, though, right, and I will say this just before we wrap up. We've already seen Darren Lewis, who's been on Tier 1, calling it out. And that's one of his colleagues. And he said he's not having it. So I'm not just saying this because, you know, just not all journalists like this, and there are journalists calling out.
A new name
for them. Who are calling it out, and that's good to see because, you know, not everyone's having it. They're saying they're not having it.
Do you think Darren Lewis was a little bit more vocal because he's recently got a little bit of a elevation of stature in it within?
Well, he's always like that, Darren. That's why when we spoke on the Tier 1 podcast about racism in football, it was why we wanted to get him on. He's not specifically counted as or classed as a Tier 1 journalist, but he's someone who is probably the most prominent journalist speaking about racism, not just because he's black, but because he talks about it all the time. And he's, you know, you've always seen him on TV shows and stuff. And when he came on, he spoke about Marcus Rashford and players like and the treatment they get, and he was very, you know, articulate and insightful on it. And he's, I think today, tweeted about, you know, we all have to take responsibility. I will be having words with colleagues.
Good,
well done,
Darren.
Do you know what
well
I mean? Done, so Darren. It's there are journalists out there that are doing it, and they need to carry on doing it.
Yeah, but the rest of you, fucking stand by. And United, make a stand and tell them to get fucked. Yeah, oh, your credentials been fucking shredded. Now do one, you arsehole. Cheers for watching. Make sure to subscribe. Give Jay a follow. Give Ronaldo a follow. And we'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.